You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are. You're back on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen, as you always are, or have been for a while here on Wednesdays, wherever your time zone is in the world. We're here on the Pacific Coast in the U.S. at 11 a.m. Thanks for joining me, and we have a great topic today, especially if you're interested in the value of how the medical field can help treat our bodies, minds, and spirits as a whole. And sort of, you know, exploring ways to include traditional medicines. A lot of people are getting into this right now. Many people are coming to me complaining, you know, about the treatments they're not getting, or they're tired of the same medications being prescribed that are not necessarily great, and some of the side effects outweigh the benefits. I mean, it's all a buzz, and you see it on the internet, and you talk to your friends, and everybody sort of has an opinion. I, may I say, have an amazing general practitioner who's into all this stuff. So thank you, doctor. But today we're talking to another amazing medical doctor who has come out with a great book. And it will help you a lot, open your eyes and your heart, and really give you a lot of information about the medical community and what's going on. So my guest today is Dr. Tony Goodman, and he's talking about his compelling book, Great Saves and Terrible Losses, The Journeys of a Surgeon. And he's going to be sharing some amazing stories about his work, how our medical and pharmaceutical systems seem to be, you know, prioritizing, let's just call it what it is, corporate profits over patient care. Dr. Goodman will also talk about the current research medicines and methods and what we're doing to treat some of the most feared diseases going on right now. We're going to talk about fear as well around the world. Let's bring him on, Dr. Goodman and his lovely wife, Maribeth. Thank you guys for being here on the couch with me today.
Thank you for having us. Good to be here.
Good morning.
We are going to just unpack this information that you shared with us about this book. And we're also going to sort of maybe get some questions, as I do sometimes, not live viewers who are talking to us, but also through email. So I always encourage you, if you have a question for my guests, folks, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. That's where you pose your questions, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. That way we can sort of answer them as they come in. And happy to help you out, guys, if you have any particular questions. But I just want to say thank you again for writing this book. And it's, you want me to call you Dr. Tony Goodman, or just Tony?
Sure.
Great, Tony. Okay. And Maribeth, you guys have really worked so hard to help people understand sort of what's going on and what went on. And you're dedicated to raising the awareness of how the practice of medicine has really dramatically changed from the 20th century. And also what we're going to do is get some great suggestions from you on how, you know, the medical community might be willing to change. All right. So let's jump into this right away and kind of define why you wrote this book. I mean, what was it that made you say, Tony, I've got to put this information out?
Well, I wanted patients to feel free to ask the questions. They're really the ones who need to start the questioning and the investigation and know that they're going to be heard.
Yes.
Some of our best teachers always said, listen to the patient and they'll tell you the diagnosis.
Yes.
We were taught by the good teachers to ask the questions, sit back and listen and don't interrupt them.
Uh-huh.
And they did studies at that time that showed that the doctors listened on an average about 17 seconds before they interrupted the patients and went on.
Yes.
Some of these patients have waited months to see you.
Yes.
And they had a lot of unpacking to do.
Yes.
The best thing we could do would be to just listen to them. And they would, in the end, tell you the diagnosis, and then you could help them better.
Boy, is that makes so much sense. I mean, I've heard so many people tell me today, and my experience included, and I'm not talking about my GP, I'm talking about some specialists as well. There are a certain amount of minutes, I understand these days when you go to visit a doctor, right? That the doctors are given to spend with patients. You know, you've got, I mean, some of my doctors, you know, it's like 5 minutes. And like you said, Tony, we've been waiting for these appointments. It's almost like we have to jot down or put on our phones notes to ourselves, get these questions out fast. You know, I have a specialist, and I won't mention anything. I think he's amazing, wonderful, brilliant. But he's only allowed to spend probably 7 minutes max with me. So he's talking 100 miles an hour like this, and how do you feel? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, slow down. You know, just I'll tell you what's going on. Just could we slow down a little bit? I mean, that's terrible that I have to do that. And a lot of people I'm talking to are saying the same thing. So, yes, is this what's going on, that doctors are allowed only a certain amount of time to spend because they're so busy?
Well, I've been out of practice for a long time, and I didn't have that problem. I could give the patients what time I needed. I always suggested to the families that someone comes with the patient, and
Right.
that patient should take notes for
Yes.
the, I mean, that family member would take notes
Yeah,
for the patient
sure.
so they could discuss it later and come back with the questions. And I
Right.
think that helped a lot. And it
Yes.
really was important to just listen. And then
Yes.
they get to the diagnosis and the treatment a lot faster, and they could unburden themselves.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, and I think, and of course, it's so funny what people are finding too, which is a wonderful tool, AI, computer systems, everything like that. It's like you'll come into a room, the doctors will look at you and go, hi, how are you? And then they'll get back on the computer and they'll just be scrolling through the history to see, because they see so many people, they can't remember you. Like you said, Tony, in the older days, people would say, oh, here comes Dr. Tony, he's so nice, and we're going to spend some time together. And, right? It's just.
Well, it was a lot easier in my day. I didn't have to deal with that. Didn't have to deal with computers or AI at all. AI is something that was never in my world, happily.
Yeah.
And it
Well.
was us and the patients, and it was the patient was the focus. And all the good
Yes.
doctors, the ones I knew and the ones I went to, would sit there and
Right.
listen to you. And then
Right.
you got the story and you did what you could for them. And they
That
gave
makes
you the
sense.
feedback. And I think we
Right.
did a good job that way, and I'm sorry to see. I don't know what AI has done. I haven't practiced with it, and I'm glad I did it the way I did it. It was free.
Right. Sure. And it does, it does help with a lot of notes, speeding things up, and of course, diagnosing and possibilities. It's amazing. But at the same time, I think something that has happened as well, and my GP says this, please stop doing online searching and creating these diseases in your mind that you don't have. It's like, oh my God, I've had this persistent pain in the right side of my brain, and I think I have a brain tumor. And so I start scrolling, and we all deep dive and go down into that, hole of, oh, I'm convinced now that I have a brain tumor. And I go into the office and he's like, give me a break.
Well, in what I did for a living, I mean, as a surgeon, it was very specific. There were things I knew I could take care of and things I couldn't, and would refer on to the best specialist I could. And what I did was aggressive because that was what surgery was. And actually knowing when not to operate was one of the most important things.
Oh boy.
And who didn't need surgery or your intervention was very, very important. And I think it separated the good surgeons from those who weren't so good.
Oh, of course, exactly. And I just want to share with viewers and listeners also, Maribeth, you're lovely, and I so appreciate you being here with us. I always think you have great content to add to whatever, Tony has to say. And also, it's been mentioned that there's been a little diagnosis of mild Alzheimer's disease that you're coping with right now, Tony, but far be it from me to see that or anyone else. But Marybeth, I know you're amazing and you've always kind of been there to help and, you know, fill in some of the gaps if there are, which there are not and will not be, I don't anticipate, but just you being here is lovely. So I wanted to acknowledge that as well. It's great to have you. What were some of the surgeries, or were you a specialized surgeon, Tony?
I was a general surgeon.
Oh my gosh.
So as a general surgeon, one of the good things was we had to rotate through all the surgical specialties, neurosurgery, GYN surgery, a lot of cancer surgery. And
right.
Because of a book I wrote early on in breast cancer over the years,
yes.
More than 80% of my patients had breast cancer or questions of it. And at a time when we were moving from doing radical surgery, and we felt that an educated patient was the most important. Mm. So we spent a lot of time with that. My staff spent a lot of time with them. And we wanted them to be in on all the decisions that were made, trying
right.
to minimize the radical surgery, which turned out to be a good thing for the patients.
Oh, you bet. And we're going to talk also about your complete philosophies and where you got that from about healing the whole person and the mind and the body and the soul and everything combined. Because I think being a psychologist that many of our diseases, diagnoses are exacerbated by our stress. Mm. So we can talk about that as well, because, you know, all the bad chemicals that are released when we're stressed on a daily basis and we're always amped up, and the cortisol and the adrenaline, and how that can harm and exacerbate cancers and other illnesses, heart problems, you name it. So anyway, so the healthcare systems have changed since you were practicing and being a general surgeon running around having to manage whatever came up in the ER. So how do you think the healthcare system has changed in the last several decades?
Now, this is a bit of a guess because I haven't been involved in it for very long.
Yeah.
But I think that there's been more specialization, which can be a good thing for the patient.
Right.
But I think the most important thing is to get away from the corporatization.
Right.
And you know, the cost and everything else.
Yeah.
And it's the relationship between you and your patient. You are a team.
You're yes.
Together. You both are there for you to give the patient the benefit in any way you were trained and can do. And the patient depends on you for that and hopefully will cooperate with what you think is best for them.
Right.
And you can take all the money aspects and the corporatization to someone else. And sometimes you're in conflict, and I think you and the patient are your own team. And you can let the corporate people do what they want, but you are the team that's going to take care of the best for the patient. It's the only way it's going to work well.
Wow. And it is probably a struggle for a lot of medical doctors and you know, just to try to deal with that. I mean, there's lots of restrictions out there, right? I mean, administrators of the hospital, lawyers for the hospital. I mean, there's always the fear of medical malpractice. That's always been going on, always, right? But even more so, right, these days?
Well, it was, and there were times when we couldn't get insurance at all.
Right.
Honestly, we couldn't let that interfere. I thought the hospital had to do what they were going to do, and we had to take care of our patients.
Right.
At one point, when early on in the training, it was really easy because we were very poor. We didn't have any money, so they didn't
sure.
insurance to us.
Sure.
And they went after the hospitals, but you really couldn't let that get in the way. That was not what you were there for.
Right.
And you just did what you had to do. And I think it worked out for the best in the long run.
Oh, gosh. You got that right. I mean, what is the best for the patient? That's the most important. By the way, guys, if you just joined me here, I'm talking with an amazing doctor. He's come out with another great book. And by the way, we're also going to dip in a moment and tell you how you can check out his other books as well. But the latest we're talking about is called Great Saves and Terrible Losses, The Journeys of a Surgeon. Dr. Tony Goodman, Dr. Anthony Goodman on the book, and also his lovely wife, Mary Beth, is here to help us out to just kind of confirm things and also get your perspective of how you've seen things happen as well, Mary Beth, throughout the years of, and you know, thank goodness, Tony, that you sort of maybe pulled out to just sort of observe, and you've traveled to help others. You've done charity work, and also being a teacher. You are a medical teacher and have been, which is loving and giving. And I'm sure your doctors, who you worked to train, have benefited so much from your work as well. So
well, it's a great opportunity to work with them.
Yeah.
Some of them have become our doctors, and some of one is operating on me. So,
That's great.
And yes, it was a great part of the teaching process and being a surgeon.
Yeah, I bet it was. So you did everything. You performed some of the daunting surgical procedures back in the day. And you know, you had more freedom to take risks. You talk about that in your book. What do you mean by that? I mean, don't doctors per se nowadays have the freedom to take certain risks? Don't they have to when they're in surgery?
Well, I think when you're in surgery, you do what's best for the surgeon. And I mean, sorry, you do what's best for the patient.
Oh, that was Freudian. I got you on that one, Tony.
You really have to do always what's best for the patient. You have to forget about the administration. They're on their own as far as I'm concerned and was concerned. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it ever entered into our minds for most of us. The patient was there. They were in trouble. That's why they were there to see you. And you did what you had to do for them. And everything else fell to the sidelines. And sometimes it was a problem. But there were times, as I said, when we had no insurance. And we just went on with our work, or we couldn't operate. We couldn't do anything.
Right.
So this was our lives, and we did what we could do until things were straightened out a bit. It never interfered with that relationship. It's you and the patient. It's not you and the administration.
Yes.
That's the important thing.
Yes, yes. It is. See, you've got the right mindset. And I recall a couple of years ago having my small surgery, carpal tunnel syndrome. You know, everybody's getting that from whatever they're doing here, computer. And I, to your point, had to sign so many disclosure agreements, so many releasing them from, and I'm saying, for God's sakes, it's a 10-minute surgery. I'm laying here, I'm out, you know, and you're doing this and I'm better and I'll see you in a week, you know, that kind of thing. And yet it's daunting. And I guess protective to the community, doctor, hospitals, whatever, to sign these. But my gosh, I mean, there were about 10 pages of disclosures that I had to sign authorizing them to do all the work for carpal tunnel surgery. I mean, right? Give me a break. I understand major heart surgeries. I understand brain surgery. I understand all that. But everybody has to go through no matter what kind of small surgery it might be, right?
Well, carpal tunnel, if you're a pianist, is pretty important.
And, well, true. I'm not, but I do use the computer a lot.
my definition of minor surgery is surgery on someone else you don't know. Everything's major when it's your surgery, and it should be treated that way by your doctor and by you in making sure you've chosen the right person and do what you expected to do as well.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. No, that makes a lot of sense. So, you talk about working in your book for the U.S. Public Health Service at the Navajo Nation Indian Reservation. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
It was a wonderful experience. I was not an MD yet. I was still in medical school in my third year, and I had the opportunity to go out to the Navajo Reservation in Shiprock.
And
I had a connection with Cornell Medical School, which was no longer going on, but we still had access, and I could work with the Navajo doctors, the healers there. They always saw the patient first. And that was very important.
Ah.
We had to act as a team.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I wasn't there to take away their job or their position
sure.
or their importance.
Sure.
They would see mm-hmm. the patient. They would talk to me. They would do what they had to do and
right.
use their treatment.
Right.
And then I would see the patient and add anything if needed be. And it worked out very well. I think the mm-hmm. patient enjoyed seeing their own mm-hmm. healing. And then
yes.
they liked the idea that I might be able to give something new, but I couldn't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then
sure.
something would come up. For example, I saw one woman who had a very severe urinary tract infection.
Oh, boy.
And
yeah.
her urinalysis looked as awful as it could be. And she went to see the Navajo healer.
Sure.
And I had given her a prescription for tetracycline tablets.
Right. She
went to see the healer. They sent me back her urinalysis study a week after her treatment when she came to see me. And it was completely clean. And I was
wow.
very proud of myself that I had cured her. And when she walked in my door, she had a necklace of tetracycline pills around her neck. She hadn't taken one tablet. And she was cured.
Oh, my gosh.
I learned a lot from that one. And I looked at her, and I had a good laugh to myself thinking I had cured her, but
right.
realized we both had our place in that treatment of that patient. And I needed to keep that in mind all the time.
Well, isn't that true? And, you know, ancient remedies, medicines that have been created from Mother Earth, you know, the natural, you know, of course, all of the cultural communities, they have their own cures. And also they have the medicines that have worked for them for centuries, you know, so we have to acknowledge that as well,
yes.
right? It's very mm-hmm. important.
And work together.
We have to work together. That's right. And also, I want to talk to you about the body, mind, and spirit of healing, because those are so huge, especially today. Everyone is talking about that. You know, there's so many people who, you know, talk about in my profession, of course, lowering your stress level, lowering your depression, working through some of those issues that can cause chemical releases that cause cancer, that cause issues in our bodies. But on another positive side, it's working with the body, mind, and spirit together. Can you talk a little bit about that work and how important that is?
Well, I think it's very important, and I'm not the expert in that. And I think in those cases, it's like any other part of medicine or the care of the patient. You get someone who's an expert in that. Mine is a rather technical aspect.
Right.
You know, I have a very limited set of tools in my box, starting with
sure.
a scalpel.
Sure.
And what I can use to my benefit for the patient. And I have to recognize that I don't have all the tools available. And I'm not an expert in everything. And
sure.
there are lots of doctors I've worked with over the years who I had great confidence in. And I knew when the patient needed them. And sometimes they knew when they needed me. And
yes.
we worked together. And I think it was a good team.
Oh, that's beautiful that you're open to it, because a lot of, you know, doctors who I've interviewed and, of course, met with, they kind of poo-poo the idea, you know, of the mind and the spirit, you know, working together. It's like, oh, just calm down. If you calm down, you'll be okay. You know, no, let's look at the whole healing process. And also it has to do with the thoughts we think, which leads me into the discussion of fear. Okay, so I mean, we've all seen the emerging deadly viruses, right? From the 20th, well, centuries of the human species here. But we, you know, we had the hepatitis, right? The 20th century, Ebola. It's coming back, of course. AIDS has always been there, but cures are happening. And most recently, of course, COVID-19. So, do you think that the world spread too much fear into the hearts of humans about the COVID epidemic? A lot of people are saying to me, yeah, it wasn't that good.
I think everybody is entitled to the information. and then they do with it.
Yes.
They will do with it. And I always felt lucky in having a whole team around me of different specialists, and it was my privilege to have them and be able to call on them, and we could work together.
Yes.
And I knew it wasn't on my shoulders because they were good at what they did. And they knew when patients needed surgery, they could count on me.
Right.
Who were not do it.
Right.
And I just always felt supported. And that's not, I guess, always the case, but you try to set up a team.
Sure.
That includes everybody at their best.
Right.
And I guess some people are lucky enough to have that team around and handy.
Right.
And when you call them in the middle of the night, they're going to yawn and sound grouchy, but they get and they help you. And I sound just as grouchy, but I would get
that too. Me too.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. You know, we're tired and we have to just sort of get with it. But, you know, we do acclimate to those late night calls of, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, and then figure out what we're going to do. But you, a much more serious situation, as being a medical doctor and a surgeon forever. Do you think that the situation with COVID has been handled well in terms of distributing medications through the world? And do you think the mRNA theories of reducing contagion are positive? Or what was your take on how everything rolled out with the COVID-19?
I just can't speak to it because I don't know. I mean, I know not much more than the ordinary citizen of this world.
Right.
You know, it's something that's beyond my expertise.
Sure.
I read what you read, and I never see patients with it. I don't see patients anymore and haven't for a very long time.
Right, right.
So I have to go to the best sources I can.
Right.
It's been like any other plague, you know. It's been huge.
Yes.
And the good areas, the national services that take care of this, have tried to educate patients, that's one thing, and then come up with the best cures they can.
Right.
And these deadly viruses are deadly viruses. And
that's right.
And we have to deal with each one as they come along.
Right.
I'm not a good spokesman on that topic.
That's fine. No, there's been a lot of pushback, you know, on social media, people saying, oh, that came out too soon. The mRNA wasn't completely perfected, and the spike proteins get into our blood and our bodies. There's so much rhetoric going on right now and studies and all that are saying, well, it wasn't as effective as we thought. Well, it was basically newer information about how to prevent that particular virus. So I guess they were dealing with it in the best way they could with what they had. I guess that's what we're saying here, right?
Yeah. It takes time. Some of these new ones just take time to find out what's going on, how to deal with it. Some of the things we've never seen in history.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to read a question, and I don't know if you if you watch these shows, but it says, what do you think TV shows like The Pitt and The Resident get right in their portrayal of the medical profession? And does that really happen in hospitals? I mean, I love those shows myself. I think they're really fun, but are they realistic, or what do you think?
Well, I think they're realistic in many ways, and they sometimes are alarming in what they show, but they're showing real things in many cases that people out in the world never have seen before. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things they do very well is the importance of the role of the nurses.
Wow.
These are probably underappreciated in many places and work the hardest. We see the patient for our few minutes, and then we go home and go to sleep. And they're there all night with the patients, taking care of them, and working hard. And sometimes, in some places, we don't appreciate them the way they deserve. And they do a lot of hard work and a lot of good work and take care of every aspect of that patient's care. And so we need to give them more support. We need to make sure we pay them well and that they get rest and they're not called upon to do 24 hours and expect to go to work the next day. So, again, I think we need to appreciate them, take care of them, and make sure we have a good supply of well-trained nurses because we really need them.
Boy, we really do. I agree.
you know, everybody who's in that system, there's a lot of people in that system who are focused on getting new doctors trained and supporting them in their work, and they all need to be appreciated and taken care of because their work is hard. It's not easy.
Oh, I have to hand it to everyone in the medical field, who, especially the hospital workers, which is something that I also understood. One of my best friend's daughters now has her own private practice in pediatrics, but I remember, you know, I knew her when she was a little baby, of course, and came up through the ranks of medical school. And she's now in, you know, her early 40s, and she's paid her dues and all that. But I remember her telling me about the grueling residencies that she had to perform in the hospitals, where she had her bed there, of course. The doctors don't get enough rest because of those long shifts. Yes. You were talking about the nurses, but the residents and the interns and all of the training requires such, I call it flooding information, you know, especially in an ER situation, that doctors have to experience. Isn't this sort of counterproductive for doctors to helping people?
It is. And I had hoped that this had changed drastically since I've been out, and I've been out a long time. And I recently met with a woman who'd been in practice now for 3 years after her residency training at the institution. And she relayed the situation that hasn't changed at all. They're overworked, they're overstressed, and they still have to go to work after long weekends on, and not being paid enough. And everything in that system is still in need of correction. And I don't know how we're going to do that, but there needs to be a balance between work and normal life to keep people at their best.
Right.
And they don't get it enough. And we still expect them to show up in the morning ready to go to work again. And
right.
It's something I don't know how we're going to correct that, except by having more people in the system who can divide the work among themselves. So that the patient gets rested, well-tuned person taking care of them. Nurses, everybody in the system, not just the doctors.
That's right. Everybody in the system. By the way, in case you just joined us, I'm talking with Dr. Tony Goodman. He's written several medical books because of his vast career being a medical surgeon. We're talking about his latest today. It's called Great Saves and Terrible Losses, The Journeys of a Surgeon. What is the best way that viewers and listeners can find out more about you, Tony, and also get copies of your other books as well?
Well, we have a website, which is Anthony Goodman. I'm sorry, Anthony A. Goodman-author.com.
Yeah, great.
That has all the links that you need to get to those.
And oh, perfect.
The books are available, and they're going to be in the stores very soon. If not, actually, they are now, I guess, in some of the stores, and they're available online.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to introduce people again to all these subjects in a readable way.
Yeah.
And it was lots of fun to do it and to collaborate with people and get the information out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Educated patient is what we want there. So it's so good for them and it's so good for us.
I agree. I think it's wonderful. And I found all your books on Amazon, by the way. So they're right there, and all the other, you know, online outlets of the good books places. So you can do that, folks. You can find out more about Dr. Goodman's adventures. Are there any, we were talking about also, I wanted to touch on this, you know, the legal aspects, how doctors fear that they're going to be sued and they have to be more careful because of the amount of lawyers out there who, of course, that's valid, malpractice insurance lawyer, that kind of thing, you know, and also the pressures of insurance, you know, as well. But there's also sort of pressure coming down, you know, I think on doctors in terms of the administration with hospitals. You know, the hospitals are requiring them to perform certain things. And Do you think that the administrations within the hospitals should change as well, Tony? What are you thinking about that?
I'm not a good source on that one. I haven't.
Okay.
I've been out of this for 30 years, so I haven't had any contact with hospitals.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it goes back to the same thing that you've heard me say. That it's you and the patient.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the team, and you've got to use whatever pressure you can if the on the hospital if it's necessary. Hopefully, it's not going to be necessary that the hospital is there to serve you and the patient. That's what a good hospital and a hospital administration should be doing. And I know they're under pressure from the money end of it, and we've got to stay with our team, and our team is to take care of the patient. That's
exactly the point. Exactly. And in your book, you know, I was reading some of the, I guess the word is grueling and daunting surgical procedures back in the day that you had to perform. And of course, the advancements with tools, machinery, AI, things like that are amazing in helping the doctors of today as well. Yeah. But do you think the doctors have the freedom to take the risks that you did? I guess that's what I'm getting to. You know, in order to save patients' lives, do you think, when I referred to the administration, are there, you know, rules or something, do you suppose, and I know you haven't been in the hospitals for a long time, where they're saying, be careful with this or don't do that or whatever might be instructed to the doctors?
I'm not sure how much that has changed or even should change. From the beginning, you should be taught and are always taught, it's the patient.
Right.
It's not the hospital. It's not the administration.
Right.
We have wonderful tools now. We never think about what they cost. If that's the best tool you can use for the patient, you should be using it.
Yeah.
And we were always had access to wonderful instruments, new ones that came in, could do in seconds what took us more than minutes to do, and do it better.
Right. Yeah.
Our egos got in the way. Oh, I can do that faster.
I love that.
150 staples that you would take an hour to do. And
now. Yeah.
So, yes, there have been great improvements. We use them when we should use them when we can. And we are on a different team. The hospital is there to do what they do and provide us. And a good hospital administrator knows who he's taking care of. And he should be on our side all the time.
Right.
It's the patient is with us. That's what they're there for. Without the patient, there's no hospital.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, I was lucky to have hospital administrators who knew that. I thought we were a good team.
Right.
And the educated patient, again, we can be the advocate for them.
Yes.
It sure helps when they are educated. They know the risks and they know the benefits and they know everything that's going to be involved. I never, ever lied to patients about anything. They needed to know those risks and be part of that decision-making process, and their families too.
Right. Very true. And, I was reading in your book also about the introduction of AI into healthcare and what's called data-driven healthcare. And I totally understand the benefits. I totally do. But I wonder if some of these technologies will sort of decrease the human connection. This is what I'm fascinated with. I'm all for AI. I'm all for improved medical practices, surgeons. I had a friend come tell me the other day, I had an appendectomy and it was done by a robot. I was like, okay, great, groovy. That's amazing. But, he said, I was out. I didn't see what was going on, but yeah, they have robotic arms and they're performing that and it is perfect and I'm fine. But there is sort of an importance, I think, of doctors and patients sort of building a relationship that, it evolves over time. It takes a while to feel safe and comfortable and all that. Do you suppose AI might be interfering with that to some extent in terms of the human connection?
Well, I don't know. Again, AI is totally different, but I was involved in the first use of instrumentation to remove a gallbladder. We did the first operation in our part of the country where we introduced an instrument through the navel and
right.
look at what was going on. And I remember taking out that first gallbladder, and the patient went home that afternoon and was annoyed she had to stay all day and couldn't go home sooner. And it was a wonderful advance that we had this no big incision, a wonderful incision, great control.
Right.
Always knew if we had to, we could open the patient if something went wrong. Mm-hmm. But all this new stuff was wonderful and still evolves today. Good instrumentation, good follow-ups, and still the judgment is there for you to make and your patient to make together. And you're not going to get rid of that. The computers and AI is not going to, I'm never worried about that replacing the human element. And the importance is the educated patient, knowing what to expect and sharing that with the patient and being the patient's first person who's going to help them in an emergency. There's nothing ever going to change that.
I agree. Beautifully said. I love that. Let's segue into something else that I find fascinating and in this day and age. This past month of June has marked Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. Okay. So you have been diagnosed with mild form of Alzheimer's, but what do you think are some of the scientific breakthroughs happening today that give you and others who've been diagnosed or possibly diagnosed in the future in treating and ultimately, hopefully, finding a cure for Alzheimer's?
Well, the first thing for me was that I was diagnosed at later in life, at age 83. I'm now 86.
No, you're not.
I'm not 87.
No, you're not. I don't believe that. You're not.
And the diagnoses are having, diagnostic patients having a different experience than when you're diagnosed at 50 or 60. My life expectancy is not as long. This is a disease that's going to progress most of the time over a long period of time. And the thing is, early detection, and it should bear no shame. People who come up and say, well, what happened with me? Sometimes my daughter said, what's wrong with that? Mary Beth Turin said, And I said, what's wrong? Something's going on. And we immediately got to the right person. Actually, not immediately. Somebody said, he's just having early symptoms of aging.
We all said,
no, I'm not. And we went to a doctor who specialized in this is not early aging. This is early Alzheimer's disease. And we have a treatment for that. I benefited from those treatments and those medications and the ability for the whole family to speak to it, because it's a family issue.
Yes.
Everybody's going to be involved. And that's so important to understand, to have no secrets, to have everybody knowing what we're going to do and how it's going to look. And how it's going to change over time. And I totally have been happy with what went on. And I understood both the physical and the mental issues, the emotional issues.
Having
that diagnosis. And without that, and without the support, it would have been a whole different story. I feel as if I lead a reasonably normal life now.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I don't drive because I know that I can drive, but I shouldn't, because it's going to be a terrible thing if I hurt somebody in an accident. And I don't need to drive. I have a wife who drives, children who drive, and now grandchildren who drive.
So, oh, boy. That's scary.
So I don't forget to do things during the day. So far, everything's been fine. And it will probably change if I live to be 100, which I hope. And I just have to understand both the physical and the mental aspects. And I'm so happy that I'm surrounded by people who also understand it.
Yes.
And close friends also know what's going on. And I'm saying, what's wrong with Tony? They know what to expect from me.
Well, exactly. And you know, with a lot of the boomers, so-called boomers, and, you know, before that, I mean, it's really a common occurrence, you know, in our society now. And you are so blessed to have Mary Beth to be there, your helper, your coach, your, you know, loving wife who helps. And I thank you so much, Mary Beth, for, you know, being that person, you know, for Tony, because I mean, I think everyone needs that as well. But again, I'm not seeing anything. There's not any noticeable thing at all that I don't think people out there could see. But, and I'm sorry you're dealing with this, but I mean, you sure seem sharp as a tack, and that you've written an amazing book as well. Great Saves and Terrible Losses. Everybody can get that on Amazon as well. But so Maribeth, you've been there, and it's not really daunting for you, right? This isn't a difficult situation for you. You seem to be a very lovely and supportive person for Tony.
Well, you know, it's a journey for the family.
Yes.
I think I want to acknowledge that mm-hmm. we benefited from a later in life diagnosis and an early diagnosis.
Sure.
So Tony has benefited from many of the medications and
yes.
from friends and family support. The Alzheimer's Association and caregivers groups are important.
Yep.
Getting a diagnosis affects the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that cannot be understated.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an important to realize when someone does receive a diagnosis, it affects the entire family. It's a little different than a cancer diagnosis in some ways.
Yes. Yes.
And
sure.
And so
sure.
I really want to honor and people who, again, you know, you're right to your point. Tony's doing amazing. And again,
yeah.
I give him a little credit because he was willing to acknowledge
mm-hmm.
his diagnosis and not hide from it and speak to it in the book in a public way.
Yes.
It was one of the most important messages in the book. Mm-hmm. Tony started writing this book in the early 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a work in progress, and you're
sure.
right, he's written several other books. And so this one felt timely and important, and to include this message
yes.
Was very important for Tony, because he feels if he can affect one person who will get an earlier diagnosis,
right, right.
benefit from the medications,
right.
It would be well served.
We used to call this, I remember this being called old timer's disease.
Oh my gosh, I remember that. Yeah.
This
yes.
is the grouchy old man syndrome.
No.
those people were ignored and thought, as you know, the less we have to do with them, the better. They're just grouchy old men. Now it's out there as a recognized
yes.
symptom or disease, and people know what to do and get help and change
right.
lives the way they need to be changed.
And boy, is that true. Yes, that's right. So I'm looking right now at some of your books, your latest, by the way. Thank you for sharing that. And bless your heart, you're amazing. And also a lot of people, if they really research it as well and get your book, you really share a lot more information on the importance of, you know, taking good care of yourself, exercise, using your mind to keep sharp. Nutrition is very important. And of course, as you said, Maribeth, having the support around people as well. So your latest book here on Amazon, Great Saves and Terrible Losses, Dr. Anthony Goodman.
Yeah.
Also, we're looking at the other one. I don't have my readers on today. The Myths of Nutrition and Fitness.
Yes.
What a great book that one is. I checked that one out too, and that was really fascinating. Let's see. I'm looking at some of the other ones. Yeah, you've got to Understanding the Human Body, an Introduction to Anatomy and Physiology. And that's four books, which I, as a novice, oh my goodness, I've been very helpful, written in plain language, which is really great.
Well,
so,
that's a great resource. The great
yes.
courses, which I
yeah.
did four courses. I loved working for them. And they
oh,
just
that's great.
Plethora of wonderful courses, and many of which I've enjoyed taking.
Oh, yes.
Myself.
Yeah.
You know, and it's available on video and all.
Oh, it really is. Yep.
And yep. they've got wonderful professors and just also aim to be understood by everybody
oh.
out there.
Right.
So
that's
you
amazing.
Pretty much learn anything you want to learn.
You sure can, huh? Amazing. Those are amazing books. So Just go onto Amazon and check them out. And again, real quick, we're running out of time, but what is your website and the best way that people can reach out to you, Dr. Goodman?
AnthonyAGoodman-author.com.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah. Great information. I appreciate you guys for being here with me today and for sharing all this information.
Thank you.
And thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, great. Thanks for helping others as you have always done and for your support and love, Mary Beth. I really appreciate that as well. All right. That's about it for the couch. I'm glad y'all could join me. If you have any questions or comments, you can check it out, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And also check out Dr. Anthony Goodman's books. They're very helpful, very wise medical books, and a lot of information in there. So thanks for joining me on the couch. I'll be back next week with an extra special guest. We'll be talking about mind, body, and health. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.